Good to see everyone back again this evening. Looks like we have a nice size assembly, and we're glad that you're able to be here today. You know, tonight I want to speak on a subject that today may seem to be controversial, although I read of no controversy regarding it in the Bible. Some of you, I know, will totally disagree with me, and that's all right. I'm prepared for that. Some of you will think that what I have to say is out of date and old-fashioned. Some of you will be able to say or will label what I say as opinion and will simply say that yours disagrees with mine. Some of you will agree with what I have to say in principle, but will claim that the principle is very broad and open to wide interpretation. But I promise you that everything that I'm going to talk about tonight is based upon Scripture. And when it comes to applications that need to be made, then I'll leave that to the individual. But with the reminder that God expects us to be honest and submissive to His will, and when we may be able to deceive ourselves, but God is not mocked. Now, do I have your attention yet? Tonight I want to speak to you on the side of modesty, on the subject of modesty, on modest apparel. I'd like to reread a couple of the verses that were read for us this evening from 1 Timothy chapter 2, verses 9 and 10. In like manner also that the women adorn themselves in modest apparel, with propriety and moderation, not with braided hair or gold or pearls or costly clothing, but what is proper for women professing godliness with good works. When looking at the subject of modest apparel, we need to recognize that it is a subject that has both a broad and a specific application. In its broadest sense, anything that draws undue attention to oneself, motivated by vanity or pride, is immodest. We can be immodest in our words, in our actions, and in our dress. And although we don't usually think about it in these terms, overdressing is just as immodest as underdressing. In fact, that is the emphasis that Paul is making in this text. He was condemning the practice of placing all of our attention and emphasis on the outward appearance of women making a display of themselves by the inordinate wearing of jewels and expensive clothing. Now, if your only impression of a person, in fact, even if your first impression of a person is, doesn't that person wear spectacular clothing, then they're probably putting too great of an influence on external things. Interestingly, the context of Paul's remarks here is the public worship assembly. Unfortunately, church service is one place where there has been a tendency to judge people on the basis of their clothing. You remember the illustration that is given by James. He talks about a rich man who comes into their assembly, who has a ring and fine clothing, and he is given preferential treatment. On the other hand, there is a man who comes into their assembly who is poor, a man who has vile clothing, and he is ignored, if not totally disrespected. We've made some kind of a statement when people feel that they must stay away from the services of the church because they don't have nice enough clothing. Well, Paul's instruction in regard to dress in verse 9 is that moderation be used, reminding us that it is the inner person that is important. God looks at our hearts when we worship. We may all be dressed up in our Sunday best and look great to one another, but how do you think that we look to God? The truth is, when we put our greatest importance on our outward appearance, our own and that of others, that then we devalue our worth as a person. In the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus said, "Is not life more than the food that we eat, and the body more than the clothing that we wear?" You know, it's a shame when people are rejected or thought less of by people because of what is on the outside. What is really important? In 1 Peter, the 3rd chapter, we read, "Do not let your beauty be that of outward adorning, but let it be the hidden person of the heart, with the incorruptible ornament of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is precious in the sight of God." So certainly, dressing to make a show of ourselves, of our wealth, or our outward beauty is indeed immodest. But tonight I want to emphasize a more specific aspect of immodesty that involves a lack of clothing, if you will. In verse 9, as Paul said, that when women dress, they should dress with propriety and modesty. And so my question tonight is, what type of dress is proper for Christian men and women? You know, one thing I'm always told by someone when I speak on a subject like this is that modesty is in the eyes of the beholder. Now, it is certainly true that it depends somewhat on the culture in which one was raised. There are times and there are places in the world, for example, where the sight of a woman in a sleeveless dress or knee-length skirt would be considered to be quite shocking, because in that culture or in that day, the accepted standard was complete covering. But I refuse to believe that some specific statements cannot be made about what is modest and what is not that transcends all customs, times, and cultures. I'm speaking of dress that is immodest because it displays our bodies in ways that God did not intend to be public. And while public consciousness and acceptance of nudity or semi-nudity changes from time to time and place to place, God has, since creation, has some very specific, definite things to say about the privacy of our bodies. In the beginning, when God created Adam and Eve, we read in Genesis chapter 2 and verse 25 that they were both naked, the man and his wife, and they were not ashamed. There is nothing shameful at all about the human body. God created it with a beauty that was intended to appeal to the opposite sex. And God certainly did a wonderful job. When Adam first saw his wife, he said, "This is now bone of my bone and flesh of my flesh." But even in the context of creation, the one place for that beauty to be shared was in marriage. The Bible is not at all prudish about sexual relations in marriage. Some years ago, I knew an older preacher who used to state publicly that he had never seen his wife undressed. Now, that's not God's intention. In 1 Corinthians, the 7th chapter, the Apostle Paul emphasizes that a man and his wife are one flesh. His body belongs to her, and her body belongs to him. But after Adam and Eve fell, when they had a knowledge of good and evil, they had a different attitude toward their public nudity. In Genesis chapter 3 and verse 7 we read, "And then the eyes of both of them were opened, and they knew that they were naked, and they sewed fig leaves together and made themselves aprons." And so when they recognized that they were naked, they knew that they needed to cover themselves, and so they sewed together fig leaves and they made, if you will, partial coverings. When God called to Adam, Adam responded by saying that they hid themselves because they were naked and ashamed. Notice that Adam and Eve now considered themselves to be naked, even though they had made for themselves aprons from fig leaves. And God acknowledged that they were naked. In verse 21, we are told that God made them tunics of animal skins and clothed them. Have we come to the point in our society where if a few strategic parts of the human body are covered, one is not naked? Well, I think that it's obvious in our society that indeed is the opinion. And the opinion is that there are fewer and fewer things about one's body that need to be covered. And so you try to find a setting. For example, maybe you want to find a movie to attend, and you read a review and it says that there is no nudity, and yet there are a lot of people, primarily women, who are 95% unclothed. But 95% unclothed is, in the eyes of the world, not naked. Even when Adam and Eve wore their aprons, God said that they were naked and needed to be clothed, and He covered them. Throughout the Bible, public nakedness is spoken of as an evil thing. We read that it was a part of the drunkenness and revelry of idolatrous people. When Moses came down from Mount Sinai and found the people worshiping the golden calf, they were naked. The first moral sexual code that is found in Scripture, in Leviticus, stresses the sin of revealing one's nakedness or seeing the nakedness of anyone other than one's own mate. And so a public display of one's nakedness is immoral. It is sinful. You know, I don't really think that the problem that most Christians have is being unaware or being unable to understand the inappropriateness of total nudity. We would recognize that nudity is indeed immodest, that it would be sinful. The difficulty we have seems to be in identifying immodesty in clothing. Clothing can be every bit as immodest as the lack of it. One's clothing can be immodest even if the garment that you wear covers you from hand to foot. It depends upon what the design of that garment is, what the intention of the design of that garment is. What is at issue here? The issue is the reaction of what we are wearing that is created in the hearts of others. There's a lot of clothing that is designed and worn for the purpose of provoking sexual thoughts in the hearts of others. Back during the early 1970s, there was a woman designer, clothing designer, by the name of Mary Quaint. And she was credited as being the mother of the miniskirt. And she said that its design was intended to make a man wish to go to bed with you in the daytime. Another prominent designer of women's clothing said that a successful dress design is one that makes a man wish to take it off. Now, certainly not all clothing is designed in this way, but it's naive for us to think that it is not the purpose of some. The root evil of immodest clothing is that of lasciviousness, which is defined in Webster's dictionary as that which is lewd or lustful, that which is intended to create sexual desire. Paul includes lasciviousness as being a work of the flesh in Galatians chapter 5, and says those who conduct themselves in such a way will not enter into the kingdom of heaven. Now I know that not every woman, probably not many Christian women, choose their clothing because they wish to create sexually impure thoughts in the minds of men, but surely Christian women must realize that they can do so inadvertently, and they must be on guard against such. There are certainly some clothing styles. There are certainly some trends as it relates to clothing styles that are commonly accepted. Commonly accepted to the point where they find their way into the average young man or young woman's life, and yet they are nonetheless immodest. It might have to do with the length of shorts or skirts, to the parts of the body that are bared, to plunging necklines or tightly fitting clothing that draws attention to the anatomy and creates sexual thoughts. Don't lie to yourself, they do. I caught a few minutes of a talk show on television some time ago. And there was a woman who came on the show, and she was a popular singer, and she was wearing a very short and tight dress. There wasn't much reaction until she walked over to the host and sat down. The crowd began to whoop and holler because they knew that there was no way that she was going to be able to sit down and maintain her modesty. The amazing thing is that these fashion designs find their ways into the lives of Christians. Many times we have an attitude that if it is something that everyone is wearing, then it is acceptable. And so we find what is popular in the world becoming popular among Christians. And unfortunately, sometimes you see these things even being worn in church. You know, the time that Paul was talking about here was in the public assembly. I don't know that there's much of a problem in the public assembly today of women who are wearing their jewels or their furs or things that promote themselves as being wealthy. And yet, it is not at all unusual to see women who are wearing things that have been dictated to them by the world. I remember when I was in college, in the college congregation down in Arkansas at Harding. And we would have an assembly of about 1,000, mostly young people. And for several months, I was involved in passing communion for Sunday morning services. And there was one friend of mine, and he's still a friend of mine, and he is a faithful and godly gospel preacher. And he went back one Sunday, and he just said, "I can't do this anymore." And the reason that he gave that he wasn't able to do this anymore was because of the clothing that was being worn by these young college girls at church. You know, one of the biggest challenges that a Christian man has, if he is normal, is to keep his thoughts and his hearts pure. And it's a shame when even Christian sisters are insensitive to that need. We have a responsibility to one another. Jesus plainly taught in Matthew chapter 5 and verse 28 that for a man to look at a woman, to lust after her in his heart, that he has already committed adultery with her in his heart. Paul admonishes us in Romans 14 and verse 13 that we never put a stumbling block or a cause to fall in our brother's way. In 1 Corinthians chapter 8 and verse 12, we are told that when you sin against your brother and wound their weak conscience, you sin against Christ. Now, some women say, "Well, I can't help what men think." And it's true, some men will lust regardless, but that is their evil. And they will answer to God for that. But some men do try to maintain purity and maintain pure thoughts. And when there are Christian women who dress in such a way that regardless of their efforts, their hearts are led into sin, the immodest woman contributes to their sin. And she will answer to God. You know, I put a lot of responsibility upon Christian men, on husbands and fathers. You know, a lot of times women are oblivious to the way men think. But you know how men think and react. And surely it is not your wish that your wife or daughter dress in such a way to fuel the sexual thoughts of the men who see them. If she is, then you need to take a stand. Now, I realize that we've approached this subject primarily about about the way women dress, and we haven't said much about men. Certainly, there is a greater problem with women because their bodies have more to reveal or to cover, and because men are by nature more visually stimulated, and no one can successfully deny these basic biological differences, but the same principle applies to both. God covered both Adam and Eve. But the trend today that you see in regard to women's greeting cards and posters and things of that nature, apparently women are wanting the same opportunity to lust after men that men want toward women. And so as parents, we need to make the same insistence that our sons practice modesty in the home, and that they cover themselves on the playground as we do for our daughters. Modesty for men and women differs some. But it is not a double standard. Women may need to cover themselves more before men, But both men and women need to cover themselves before God. Well, there's one last specific that I would like to address. It's amazing how many Christians think that all of the standards of modesty and decency are revoked when you go to the beach or a public swimming pool. You know, public and mixed swimming is, generally speaking, immodest. It's putting men and women in close quarters in various stages of dress or undress. It is a lascivious, a lust-producing situation. Don't kid yourself. I've heard a lot of Christians deny it, but I've never heard anyone who was worldly deny that one of the reasons they like to go to the pool or to the beach was so that they could look at the way the women were dressed. When I was 19 years old, I worked for the highway department of a city, and one of our jobs was to trim the grass in some of the public places. There were five or six college-age boys that were working for the summer, and every week we would have to go to the parks and the cemeteries and trim the grass in these public places. Most of these guys would do anything to finagle their way out of it, except when it came time to trim the grass at the public pool. And then they fought for the opportunity. They were dressed in work clothes, working hard in the sun. They were not interested in the sun or in exercise. They were there because of the lust of the flesh and the lust of the eye. Most feeble attempts that I've heard at justification is that Christians control their minds so they don't have that problem, but don't believe it. When one becomes a Christian, he does not stop being a man. When one becomes a Christian, the temptation to lust does not go away. As a matter of fact, we become more aware of it. Now, there's nothing certainly wrong with swimming as an activity. God created the ocean. The beaches are beautiful. And certainly it can be a part of a Christian vacation, a Christian family's vacation. Generally speaking, there are ways to find a part of a beach that is basically not occupied, that you can enjoy this together as a family. And yet, when this becomes a part of our accepted lifestyle, it begins to break down the resistance that we may have to these things. I've got a couple of stories that I would like to tell about things that I became aware of as it related to Christian people. There was a couple that my wife and I knew. In fact, we knew them from back in the years that we were in college together. They had children that were the same age as our children, and we would go to visit them occasionally, and they would come to visit us occasionally. And they were individuals who, on a regular basis, frequented their local public pool. As a matter of fact, they would invite us when we were visiting them to go, and there was no way that we would have felt comfortable doing that or felt that it was right. After a few years of visiting them, their son was about 16 years of age, and the dad said to me, "I don't know what I'm going to do about him." He said, "He just can't keep his eyes off of the girls in the bikinis." Well, that was a fairly simple fix to me. Don't go places where the girls are dressed in bikinis. Later on, I learned that his son had a problem with lust, and he made improper advances toward some of those girls. Another situation involved three young married couples in a congregation. The man who was the preacher in that congregation was a man who was a friend of mine. Those young couples were very close. They enjoyed one another's company, and one of the families had a swimming pool, and they would spend in the summer months just about every weekend in the pool together. After doing that for some time, one of the husbands made an improper advance toward one of the other man's wives. And later on, it was discovered that one of the men actually had become involved in having an affair with one of the other women. Now, I'm not saying that that the time that they spent together is what made that happen, but certainly the temptation would have been there. There was a young man who was a very good youth minister in one of the congregations that I was working. And he had come from the South and seemed to have a different opinion about boys and girls swimming together. And he took them on a mission trip. And they worked very hard on that mission trip. And I think he was a good leader to them. He was a good spiritual leader to these young people. And it was a part of his culture. He just accepted the fact that they would enjoy, during that trip, spending time in the motel pool together. When he came back, he said, "I will never do that again." He said, "You know, I have been trying to teach these young people how to properly relate to one another." And he said, "The last thing in the world that these young people need on their minds is to think about how the boys looked or how the girls looked in their swimming suits." You know, Paul told Timothy that the young men were to regard the young women as sisters with all purity. What am I saying? I'm saying, well, think about it. God commands us to be modest and chaste. In Romans chapter 6 and verse 13, our bodies are not to be used as instruments of sin, but rather as instruments of righteousness. Sexual desire is natural and desired in marriage, but indiscriminately displaying oneself before others will cause some to lose their souls. Now, you may have grown quite accustomed to wearing what you wear. We can reach the point where we can be naked and unashamed. But I believe that one question would resolve this, and that is, would you want to be found in that setting when Jesus comes again? You know, Adam and Eve recognized when the presence of God was there that they were naked and they were ashamed. Surely, if we are conducting ourselves in such immodesty, that should the Lord come again, we would recognize immediately that we were naked and ashamed. And so we are to have modesty. You know, the Lord created us in a magnificent way. And one of the greatest blessings there is for a young couple is to share themselves with one another once they marry. We're living in a society today where very few young couples will ever know that joy because they have not waited to the time when that is proper and when it is right. All of us need to seek for ways to maintain the purity of our thoughts, the purity of our actions, the purity of our lives. Tonight, it may be that you're here as one who's not yet a Christian. We would encourage you, if this is your need, to be obedient to the gospel. We also know that if you are a Christian, that you may have difficulties in your life that you are confronted with, and we are here to support and to encourage one another. And if you have this desire, if you have this need to respond to the Lord's invitation, we encourage you to come as we stand and as we sing.
All things are ready, come to